This is the World Cafe. I'm David Dye. Today, we are spending some time in South Africa as a part of our Sense of Place series with guitarist and songwriter Johnny Clegg as our guest. Clegg came of age during the apartheid era in South Africa, and his love of Zulu culture repeatedly got him into trouble, but also made him a trailblazer. At the age of 15, the police were bringing him home to his mother with warnings for sneaking into the areas where itinerant Zulu workers lived. He was learning the Zulu music and dance from Charlie Mzila. A short time later, he met Zulu tribesman Sifu Mchunu, who he would go on to form the band Jaluka with. Jaluka's 1976 debut single, Woza Friday, is now something of an anthem in South Africa, but initially it struggled to get airplay as the state-run South African Broadcasting Corporation would not allow music that mixed influences across racial groups. Nearly a decade later, Johnny Clegg formed a second mixed-race group, Savuka, after his partner Sifu Mchunu decided to leave the music business. The band found more international fame, and Clegg solidified his status as an icon in South Africa. We recorded this interview and performance in the fall, just as Johnny Clegg was putting out a new solo album called King of Time, and as he was about to complete his last world tour, a set of shows he called The Final Journey. He had decided to book these performances after revealing that he had been suffering from pancreatic cancer. I began by asking Johnny Clegg how he was feeling.
I feel very blessed and very lucky to be able to do this, I must tell you. I'm in remission. And feeling strong, and my head is strong, and I, you know, everything is dandy on my side.
Well, I understand that a lot of the tour kind of leads you through your life, and you do a bunch of it chronologically. So I thought we might kind of go that way today, and maybe start off with a couple of really, really early tunes. One that you did in Zulu and one in English. If you look at videos for Woza Friday, this is like a cultural phenomenon. There's morning shows that use it as their theme. There's people performing it at office parties. There's tell me a little about the song and its origins.
As I basically discovered when I entered university, the Witwatersrand in 1970, what I had been doing was a kind of very rough kind of anthropology. I didn't know that. I just loved the music and the dancing and got immersed in the culture and immersed in the Zulu migrant labor community around Johannesburg. So I decided to do anthropology, and I passed and I qualified for an honors degree, which after if I completed it, I would be able to get a job at Wits. So I ran out of funds and I answered an advert in the newspaper. And it was to part-time manage a chicken farm 44 kilometers north of Johannesburg in a place called Knoppieslagte. And basically it was a part-time job, 5:30 in the morning till 12 in the afternoon. I had a free board and lodging, all the eggs and chickens I could eat, which was heaven for a student, and a reasonable salary. I did this for 6 months, and during the very, very cold July winter period in Johannesburg, we'd wake up and we'd shiver while the owner of the farm on a Monday morning would read out all the duties that I had to oversee, but all the 15 workers would also listen, so we would stand there for about 20 minutes. And while one particular Monday morning, a guy next to me scuffed his toe and said quite audibly, "Ach man, Woza Friday," which means, "Oh man, come Friday. Please." And I had a very strong sense that this, you know, this was an amazing, quite a powerful little expression. So I decided that afternoon to write a song. I wrote it, and I used folk at that time, folk hammer claw picking style, Western, and kind of, you know, folk country chords and melody, but everything in Zulu. And the words are, "We Baba, Gwinzi Maglum Tlaba," Dad, he's writing a letter home. "As you told me, the world is a tough place. Umsebenzi ubogile, work is killing me. Angathi leli viki lingaphela. I wish this week would come to an end. Woza Friday, my darling. Come Friday, my darling. You the day that I'm in love with." We released it as a single, and it was restricted on Radio Zulu. And I went in to see them, and they said, "Well, you've got adoptives, English adoptives in the lyrics. And at that time, the apartheid government was running all, there was no independent radio station, it was all state-owned. And they were driving a policy of cultural and racial segregation, because otherwise your homelands wouldn't work. So they had to keep them pure and separated. So all the radio stations were had this kind of linguistic censorship, and white overseers would who were pretty au fait with the language, but you know, black assistants would alert them to the fact that, oh, there's an adoptive here from Afrikaans or English, so we can't have this because we need to keep the language pure. And it was a sort of a language censorship. So I said, they said to me, what's the word for Friday? And I said, Olestano. So they said, why didn't you use it? I said, because everybody says, was a Friday? You know, it's like a, and they said, well, that's slang and we can't allow it. Long and the short is that they restricted it, and I was very depressed, and I went away trying to mull and work out what to do next. And about 4 months later, South Africa being the leading country in political irony, it went to number one on Radio Sotho. Nobody knew why or how, but the radio DJs played it until it went to number one. I got a gold record, single. That's the story of this song.
We baba kunzima kulumhlaba. We baba nomsebenzi ubokile. We baba nemali ayenge. Amatile lifikile ngaphela. We baba, we baba. We baba, unzima kulumhlaba. We baba, lomsebenzi ubokile. We baba, nemali ayenge. Amatile lifikile ngaphela. We baba. My darling, what's a Friday? Seven supogile. What's a Friday, my sweetie? What's a Friday? Ilangalin komile. Wena. We baba,
we baba.
Kunzima kulomhlaba.
We baba,
we baba. Lom seven supogile. We baba. Le mali anke awatile livigili kaphela. We baba awuthi wosa wosa Friday my darling. Wosa Friday seven supogide. Wosa wosa Friday my sweetie. Wosa Friday ilanga linkomile. What's a Friday? Seven supogile. What's a Friday, my sweetie? What's a Friday? Ilangani komile wena. Kati makwa. Tomorrow morning, goodbye, I'm going now.
I'm going.
Goodbye, I'm going now.
I'm going.
Tomorrow morning,
I'm going.
Tomorrow morning,
I'm going.
Goodbye, I'm going now. I'm going now.
That's a universal. Now, it's great to hear which came first, the expression or the song.
Yeah, no, the song came long before.
That's great. Johnny, I would love to know how, with all these separation laws you're talking about, how in the very beginning you got exposed to Zulu culture. I mean, how did you get there, physically even?
Physically, my passport was that I was young and dumb. I was 14 years old, white kid, growing up in a white residential area. My mom was a jazz singer, a cabaret singer. My stepfather was a crime reporter. I grew up in a very, very interesting household. It was full of stories, you know, about music and about, you know, South Africa's more colorful side. And my stepfather took me into Soweto and into Alexandra Township many times when I was 9. And so I knew that there was another world out there where most of my contemporary age mates, it was just a out there concept. They didn't, and, you know. So when I heard Zulu street guitar music for the first time, and you must understand that street music was huge when I grew up. And it was like a background sound to white, you know, middle-class urban living. But nobody noticed it. Mm-hmm. It was just there. It's what they did. When I had the opportunity, by chance, to go up one night to get bread and milk from a store, I came out the store, and there was a chap standing outside playing, and that was Charlie Mzila. And I heard something, because I'd been learning classical Spanish guitar. I worked out that the tuning was different. And not only was the tuning different, but the picking style was completely different. Like in America, the blues, this Maskanda music was a complete, you know, envelope to itself. It was its own music. And they had come to these Western instruments, these migrant workers and Zulu workers, and they had reconfigured them. And as I got into it more, they even changed the strings around on the guitar. They didn't care, you know, that there's 700 years of tradition and that, you know, Europeans had worked out very carefully the length of the fret so that the right note could be, you know, they tuned it differently, and they just made it work for their music. And I found that quite amazing. So I asked him if he would teach me, and he did. It was inevitable that he would take me to the hostels and to his dancing team. And slowly this whole world opened up to me. And I learned these songs perfectly, but I didn't know what I was singing. Mm. And so what happened is it was a particular song that everybody wanted to hear me play. And I, you know, in my mind, it was either a war song, because there's lots of war songs. The Zulu are a military culture. And there are wedding songs and coming out ceremony songs and little folklore tales, which are all adapted to the guitar. And I thought it was one of those songs, you know. But it was actually a very bawdy, lewd and rude song. And so I'd play the song, and the migrant audience on the top of a building or at the hostels, they would laugh, and they would say, "Play it again, play it again." And I would play it again. Even I used to think, "Wow, I'm doing so well. I've nailed this song," and I would play it, and they wouldn't let me play anything else. Play it again, play. And they would be stamping the ground and hitting their knees, and I'd play it, and then I just got suspicious. And I said to Charlie, what is this song about? Now, he didn't speak English very well at all. And he would say to me, I can't explain, or something like, so I got a dictionary. I bought a dictionary, and I couldn't find these words in the dictionary. So I thought, you know what, I have to learn Zulu. So I bought myself a handbook. And I started teaching myself and started speaking and working out. And then I discovered what the song meant, and I never played it again. so then the other thing is I landed up in at a place where they rehearsed at night. It was the medical research center. These were workers in the medical research compound where all the male workers lived, and they would do their traditional tribal dancing at night. So my world changed. And by the time I was in matric, I was living in another universe, which really upset my mom because I didn't have many white friends at that time. I didn't have any girlfriends. I was into two things: Zulu culture and bird watching. And I had the feathered kind. I had a Cape Raven. I had two falcons in my room. I'd got into falconry. I became a field guide for the Johannesburg Ornithological Society and became very attached to nature. And when I finished matric, when I worked out what I wanted to be, I thought, there's two things. I want to be a game ranger in Zululand. and so that was where I was headed for. And out of the blue, my grandfather had bequeathed a little bit of money, but only for education. It couldn't be used for anything else. And so my mom said, you got to give university a chance. Now, I hated school. I wrote Zulu as a seventh subject for my matric. I had to get permission from the Department of Education. I wrote it in the headmaster's office. So I managed to scrape through a matric, and I got a university entrance by the skin of my teeth. I did Zulu 1, I did English, I did phonetics and linguistics, and I did social anthropology. And when I hit that course, it was like a fish to water, and I just thought, wow, this is amazing.
You'd already been doing that.
I'd already been doing that. It came to me naturally. So then I went on, finished my degree, got a job there, taught 1 year at the University of Natal in Durban, and then 3 years at my alma mater at Wits. And then in 1983, while we were doing this, Sipa and I were, he was a gardener and I was teaching. So they used to call us the gardener and the professor in all of the African publications. Because it was just, for them, it was just so weird that, you know, a lot of, you know, people who saw us and said, how did that happen? How did a professor at university team up with a gardener?
Well, how did you first meet him?
Well, he was, he came down in 1969. I was 16 and he was 17 when we met. And he was the first musician that was my age. So there was a natural kind of bonding. Everybody was always 10 years. Charlie was 10 years older than me. He had heard that there was this white boy who's playing Zulu music, dancing and doing all this stuff, and he didn't believe it. So the guy next door to him was Charlie's cousin. It's complete coincidence. And he spoke to this chap, and this chap said to him, no, this is genuine. My cousin taught him. So he said, where does he live? He said, he lives in Yeovil. I gave him the address, and I came back from school, and I found him standing outside my block of flats where I lived. And I was on my bicycle, and every time I saw a street musician, my heart would leap because I knew I'd get more repertoire and learn more. So he came up and he said to me, are you Big Ears? Which is my Zulu name, which Charlie gave me, which I didn't like, but you know, it was just for me, any name in Zulu was great, you know what I mean? And he called me that because my hair was so short that my ears stood out, you know, like quite prominently. The Zulu have a very sharp eye for personality traits, physical traits, you know, the way you behave. And the culture is amazing in that every human being, men and women, have praise names. And what this does is that you could be just a garbage man collecting garbage, but you have praise names. And these are special names that are about you, your personal history, good things and bad things that you do. And at weddings, in traditional ceremonies, if you dance or you do a gia, or as a married woman you dance, or as a young woman you dance, your age mates, your indanga, shout them out. Mm-hmm. You are not anonymous. you have that place, you have a history, and they recount it, and they're very funny. When you hear somebody's praise name shouted out, they change in front of you, you know. One day I was going to Wemmo Hostel with my dancers, my team, walking down Rusyk Street towards the big hostel. I had my Sunday, it was Sunday afternoon, I had my dancing sandals in my plastic bag. Now, there's a national retail outlet called Checkers, and they used to have these yellow bags with checkers on it. So all plastic bags now are called by the Zulu Amacheka. Checkers, okay? So while we were walking down, I was chatting to somebody. I was right at the end of this group of guys walking down the road. Another group of Zulus came out of the hostel, and they were armed with fighting sticks, and they were drunk, and they were singing a song to say, sort of, get out the way, we want to pass. And, you know, my guys being Zulus as well, they said no. So I heard sticks falling on the guys in the front, and there's a way that if you're not armed, if somebody hits you, you use your shoulder to take the stick and you grab it. And, I, you know, there was all of this stuff going on. And I was, how old was I? I was about 17. And I ran across the road with my, you know, to just see what was going on. And it was quickly diffused and these guys moved on. And then I walked back to my group and they all turned to me and they said, Wabalega no chegas. You ran away with your checkers packet. Which basically means you're a coward. So, and that has stuck with me. That's part of my praise names. So when I go and do my little war dance, they all say, wow, Balega no chegas, when they shout, you know, which is pretty. So it's, and people laugh, you know, and they always say, hey, wow, Balega no chegas, you know. So it gives you a place and it gives you it gives you a trajectory. One of the problems of being human is finding the way through time and space that you feel belongs to you. Because the forces of the world try and break you, and everybody gets broken in some way or other. Nobody survives. But as you move through these various moments, and you find yourself doing stuff that you never thought you would do, you know, and you carry on. But you make sense of it. You say, I started here, and then I did this, and this happened, and I chose to do this, etc. And so basically, fundamentally, it doesn't matter what culture you come from, that is what you try and work out. This happened to me, you know. When you get praise names, it's your the people you grew up with. It's your age from your district. And they mark you off through each milestone. And you get a sense of an objective reflection of your life in a funny set of stuff, which you sometimes like and sometimes don't, but ain't that the world? So that's the story.
Well, you did a song on Universal Man that I'd love it if you could do now called Africa. And tell me a little bit about where that one came from.
Okay. We're going to play you the Johnny Clegg version. Many artists cannibalize their own songs and other people's songs. I wanted to bring out the aspect of the actual idea of Africa Kalabangwele, which means Africa, you're innocent or weeping. So I wanted to harden it up a bit and say, yes, we are an emerging continent. And we have, like all continents, their darkness. But at the same time, there seems to be every generation, there is this incredible energy of the young and the youth who come and bring a new wave of hope and energy and one step forward, you know. And so it was, in a way, looking at that amazing comeback factor, the comeback factor. In whether it's droughts, whether it's, you know, political, civil wars, whatever it is, right through this, there's that very powerful energy and life force, really. That so the second version, which is what we're going to play, is Africa, brackets, what made you so strong?
Africa ukala bangwele Africa ukala bangwele wema Africa ukala bangwele Africa ukala bangwele wema Alala Alala Rain falling like a symphony on the rooftop of my heart. There's a movement in the silent deep before this big dream star. I see your eyes shining like a neon light, you smiling in the dark. Ooh, what made you so strong? What made you so strong? I've seen you walking in the marketplace. You buy political regret. You've been walking on the water again. You know your feet never get wet. You just say, Africa vukala bantwele. Africa vukala bantwele. Ones. I say a prayer for our love. I say a prayer for peace on the earth, for the daughters and the sons. While your life unfolds like a cheap street fight, you smiling in the dark. Ooh, what made you so strong? What made you so strong? I've been waiting all my life for this, to see how the deal goes down. There's an AK-47 on the dashboard. You know mercy's left town. You just say, Africa vukala bantwele. Africa vukala bantwele wema. Africa vukala bantwele. Africa, ukala bantwele wema. Hey, Africa, ukala bantwele, kala bantwele wema. Africa, ukala bantwele wema. Ah la la, ah la la.
Johnny Clegg is our guest on our Sense of Place visit and stop in Johannesburg today. And maybe to describe the economy of your career here and how difficult it was and what was happening in Europe. And, you know, I mean, were you and Sifo and Gianluca able to perform here?
Well, what we did, there were a number of laws against racial mixing, but there was also, which most people don't understand, there was also a cultural segregation layer of laws. You had the Group Areas Act, which separated the racial groups. But then you had the Separate Amenities Act, the Separate Immunities Act said, whatever race group that you are in, you will have immunities available to your culture. And only you and your people and your in that area can play in that or go to that swimming public bath or to that public netball facility, whatever facility there was, or soccer field, whatever. Only you could, that's for you. The big thing about freedom in South Africa and the key to the new democracy is that in the old South Africa, you only had access to any power as the member of a group. In the new South Africa, you have a one-to-one relationship with the constitution. You have individual rights. It doesn't matter what group you come from. You're born here. You have the same rights. Everybody's equal. So this is they battled to keep this going. They battled and battled because. It just happens that, on the fringes of, if you're living on the fringe of Alexandra Township, their kids would spill over, there would be some open area there and some kids would play. So there was always some mixing of some sort. But I got through, I made my penetration into Zulu culture because I was a dumb kid. So I was arrested when I was 15 in the compound of the Batla dancing team. And then I was arrested again at Wema Hostel, and I kept getting into trouble. And they would just say, take me back to my mom, and my mom would like say to me, listen, you can't go on like this because it's going to get back to school. And she was worried because the police would tell her horror stories about Wema. And, the Zulu are a fractious bunch. They're the Irish of Africa. Mm-hmm. You have to stick fight after a wedding. So all the grooms and the bride and the bridegroom's men stick fight and have serious fights with fighting sticks and shields and basically, especially the girls, the women's people, they want to show that she can't be disrespected or treated badly by that clan that she's married into. And that clan wants to show these guys that she's married into a proper warrior clan, that they're not pushovers either. So it can be very, very fractious and blood spilt and head wounds and all that stuff. It's and that was a good wedding. So feuds break out between districts, regions, and clans. And it can lead to killing and to assassination squads hunting other groups and killing key members who they thought were responsible for this murder or whatever. And it happens in the hostels, and then the police would arrest me and come with all these horror stories to my mom. And my mom would say, what are you doing there? You're a musician. What on earth? And I'd say, I go in straight into the dance area and I dance and I come out again. That's it. And they were always asking me, the police, how did you get in? And I never wanted to tell them. So I said, no, I snuck in. There's always two municipal police, because these are municipal hostels, which are rigorously run according to all the apartheid regulations. So it's not just whites can't go in. Women can't go in. Indians, nobody, only black males can go in. And they watch. So what would happen is that the dance team would come out as they do normally, and they'd chant, and they'd chant out the main gate, and I would be waiting at the gate, and then I would go into the middle of them, and they would chant me through the main gate, and the guards never saw me, and I'd come in. So I became very street smart. I became, sleep on eye. But, we would just be sitting at night. I remember one incident in a corner of Raleigh and Harrow Road. We were sitting in my little blue Beetle and we were just talking, and the police jumped out and they said, what are you doing? I said, I'm chatting to my buddy. And they tore my car apart. They went into the trunk. They looked under the seat. They were looking there. Because in that time, a white and a black together, it couldn't be normal. Yeah. It was, you guys are up to something. And that was it. And it's not just white police, you know, black police as well, you know, would say, what's this white guy doing here? What are you guys doing? What kind of a deal are you up to here? No, I'm just learning Zulu guitar. Yeah. Come up with a better one, you know. So that was just on a personal level. And there were also some moments, you know, where very conservative whites would be outraged that I'm walking down the street with a black guy. We both playing guitars together. And they would shout out, you know, slurs and insults and whatever. But I kind of understood that there's a transaction going on here. In order for me to be this, I've got to accept that. I've got to find my way. I wasn't politically motivated at all. I was there because I loved the music and I loved the dancing. I wanted to be a Zulu. I wanted, and it came out of the dancing more than anything. Because when I saw war dancing, I didn't have the vocabulary then, and if you asked me, I would just tell you I like the dancing. But what I saw was that the Zulu male body, traditional body, was coded and wired to carry certain clear messages about masculinity. It's a warrior culture. And my culture didn't carry that. When we became a band, we would have about 20% of our shows annually closed down by the police. So we would be performing, they would come in, and they would say, the show's over, everybody go. And sometimes they would prevent us coming into the township, and they'd say to the whites, myself, Gary, where are your permits? Because you had to have a permit from a magistrate. You had to apply 3 months before, and then they would give you the permission to go in for that day. And this would go through the security police. They'd look at your political profile, whatever it is, or your criminal, whatever. And unless it was economic activity, which is you going in to deliver goods, you know, and services, whatever, then you got to leave immediately. That was technically, nominally the law. They didn't have enough people to monitor this. You understand? There were always holes in the fence. So I never asked when I was young, why is there a fence? Why are we separated? I always said, where are the holes? How do I get over the fence? It was just an obstacle in my way. When I got to university, I did political science. I became a lot more aware. I joined the emerging trade union movement, got arrested for those activities. But the key is that this was really a conversation between two South Africans, a Zulu gardener and a white kid. And we kind of grew up together. And he's my oldest mate. Mm-hmm. So that took on. Politics found us, and then we started to write about it, and we started to confront it, and we started to, you know. So Juluka was first a cultural, and then as it came to an end, more of it made a political statement by just physically existing, you know, coming back again after being closed down, coming back again.
So in that case, what is Scatterlings about? Is it how political is it, or how?
Well, basically, you can't do social anthropology or any social science, really, if you're a racist. So you have ideas about race, which you haven't worked through. And when I joined the department, they had a course called Race and Racism, which is the first course that you taught to first years coming in. It's their first course. It was 6 weeks. Because they came out of apartheid schools, apartheid families, apartheid churches, religion, state. And they had certain ideas about race and how different we are. And so we would challenge and examine that. You can imagine teaching this. So we all had to, as young, you know, my first year as a teacher, we had to, you know, so it made quite an impact on me, and it came out in Scatterlings of Africa, which is really saying there is one species, and that's the human species. And all cultures are different, but it's superficial because all cultures are human culture. And we must not fall into the trap of these kinds of divisions. That's it.
Scatterlings of Africa.
Yeah, oh, ha. am, ye ham, o am, ye m, o am, ye ham, o am, ye m, o am, ye ham, o am, ye m, o am, ye ham, o. Copper sun sinking low, scatterlings and fugitives, hooded eyes and weary brow, seek refuge in the night. They are the scatterlings of Africa, each uprooted one. Oh mama, yeah, on that road to Pelamanga, where the world began. I love the scatterlings of Africa, each and every one. Oh mama, yeah, on that road to Pelamanga, where the world began. Yim o ham, ye ham o ham, yim o ham, ye ham o, yim o ham, ye ham o ham. Yeah, mm, oh, yeah, I'm home. Ancient bones from old Dubai, echoes of the very first cry. Who made me here and why? Beneath this copper sun, African idea, make a future clear, make a future clear, make a future clear. And we are scatterlings of Africa, both you and I. Oh mama, yeah, on that road to Pelamanga, beneath this copper sky. I love the scatterlings of Africa, on a journey to the stars. Far below we live forever, dreams of what we were. Yum o am, ye ham o, yum o am, ye ham o, yum o am, ye ham o, yum. Scatterlings of Africa, scatterlings of Africa, scatterlings of Africa. Scatterlings of Africa.
Johnny Clegg, we came to South Africa for music, but the politics and the history of this land is all part of what we're talking about. We have time for one more song.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I was going to mention, just because it would fit at any point in any part of discussion we're having, Cruel, Crazy, Beautiful World.
Yeah.
Or if you wanted to play something on the concertina.
That's fine. That's okay. That's a great song. I wrote it for my son. I was trying to find an African way to celebrate the birth of my first child. I'd watched other people, who were massive musical celebrities singing about their children or the first child, and it was like, this has never happened before. Nobody's ever had a child before, and I just didn't want to do that. So what I did is I got a few African idioms, to guide your child. You know, you have to wash with a crocodile in the river. You know, you have to swim with the sharks in the sea, and you have to live with a crooked politician. Trust those things you cannot see. So it's really equipping, you know, 7-8-year-old just to say, you know, watch out for these things. Cruel, crazy, beautiful world. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You got to wash with the crocodile in the river. You got to swim with the sharks in the sea. You got to live with the crooked politician. Trust those things that you can never see. Aye, yeah, yeah, Jessimpana. Aye, yeah, yeah. Aye, yeah, yeah, Jessimpana. Aye, yeah, yeah. You got to trust your lover when you go away. Keep on believing tomorrow brings a better day. Sometimes you smile while you're crying inside. Maybe once you walk away when the truth is shining bright. Aye, 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 Jessimpana. Aye, 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 Jessimpana. Aye, aye, cause it's a good every day you wake up. I hope it's under a blue sky. It's a cruel, crazy, beautiful world. One day when you wake up, I will have to say goodbye. I'll say goodbye. I'll say goodbye. Beyond the door, strange, cruel, beautiful days lie waiting for you. I want you to know you will not escape loneliness. Maybe you lose hope too. Aye, yeah, Jessimpana. Aye, yeah. Aye, yeah, Jessimpana. Aye, yeah. Cause it's a cruel, crazy, beautiful world. One day when wake up, I will have to say goodbye. It's a cruel, crazy, beautiful world. One day when you wake up under a blue sky, I'll say goodbye. I'll say goodbye. When I hold your small body close to mine, I feel weak and strong at the same time. So few years to give you wings to fly, show you stars to guide your ship by. Your world, so live in it. Oh yeah, then mama, it's your world, so live in it. Oh yeah, it's your world, so live in it.
Thank you.
Johnny Clegg, our guest. Johnny, who's your friend who's playing with you today?
This is Andy Innes, the musical director of my band. With me for now some 26 years. He was the guitarist in Savuka. And it's been a long journey, and it's been a pleasure and a privilege for him to be part and parcel of this long journey that we've been on.
Well, let me use those words, too. It's a pleasure and a privilege to have Johnny Clegg as our guest today on the World Cafe.
Thank you.